All right. There are a couple things that came up after the show last week. That came up last week that I'd like to talk about. And I think this is a good time as I need to talk about it. Has to do with role play. I don't think there's any doubt that in Judaism there is role playing. I think that even the article of Saul Berman, which is a very liberated article, makes it very clear that in Judaism there are roles. I mean, that's the premise of the article. We read it last week. While men have clearly defined roles, that is, in the sense of the halakha requires them to be husbands, fathers, and the support of the family, the role of homemaker, wife, mother, is preferred for women, not required. I think that's a very important contribution that Saul Berman made into our thinking. It's not required, but it's clearly protected. And that's why Saul Berman understands mitzvah aseh shazman grama is the way the halacha protected the wife's role. That it said, and it also gave it a priority. It said that this has a certain priority. And I don't think that we have to be aware that that is clearly true. And the halacha is clearly viewed these two roles. One is a required role, the male role is clearly required. The woman's role is preferred, protected, but not absolutely required. As a result, I think that there, especially as we move into the modern period, there's a little bit of distortion about how this concept of mitzvah aseh shazman grama works. You see, it's true, the man's role, where the halacha views it, it's true that the man's role is a lot more specific mitzvah. Yes, men are required to put on talis and tefillin, and there are a lot of variety of other mitzvot of lulav and sukkah that men are required and wouldn't have the option of doing. But I think it's wrong to think that from a religious perspective, I'm not talking the way we perceive a mother's role or a homemaker's role, the way the halacha perceives it, it doesn't mean there's any fewer mitzvot in that role, there are fewer specific mitzvot. But I think that it would be a misunderstanding of where the halacha views a woman's role to say it has less mitzvot. You see, when a mother gets up and makes meals for her family, makes a good breakfast or a lunch and prepares lunches for the kids, that's a mitzvah v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. And the Chazal go to great lengths to point out v'ahavta l'recha kamocha is part of a marriage relationship too. The halacha states, for instance, that how do we know? It seems sort of backward, but why is a boy and a girl obligated to meet before they get married? So the Gemara says, because if they get married and they're not compatible, they may come to dislike each other. That would be a violation of the Now, that is a way of saying that marital compatibility is a mitzvah in the Torah. That's what Chazal are doing. That's a mitzvah in the Torah. To love your wife. Okay? I'm not talking about lust. I'm not talking about being wonderful in bed. I'm talking about loving. Loving is a mitzvah d'oraita because you're obligated to have compassion for all Jews. And certainly for your wife, where the clash, or your spouse, where the clash might be greatest. Well, the same thing is true for your children. Now, that's a little harder, I understand. But the fact of the matter is that the woman's role within the home is constantly filled with fulfillment of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. It doesn't, yes, it's not, maybe, it's not a specific mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah that can put, well, I can't put a thing. I say v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. And I don't think that it's any less religiously fulfilling. Certainly in the Haredi home, that's how they treat it. That's how they teach it. That's how they understand it. And there's a problem of the social, how society views it. that really doesn't concern me now in this year. What I'm concerned about in this year is how the halacha perceives that role play. It's not any less ritually, spiritually fulfilling, especially important. Whether a person finds it fulfilling or not, that's a different question. That has to do with the baggage the person comes to a particular religious experience, and each one comes to it differently. And I agree that society presents a certain amount of problems with this whole role play. At some time, we're going to read a very interesting article by Rav Amram Lichtenstein, where he talks about this. He doesn't talk about this specifically, but we get into the question of a woman's role in society, and we get to talk about women in public communal roles. We'll read a selection from there, and I think he'll drive this point home a little bit more. That's correct. So men can do it too. And men can do it too. I agree. But I'm talking about a domain in which, clearly in the home, there are a lot fewer specific mitzvot. At least the way the halacha is proceeding. It's freeing. But it's not freeing you from doing mitzvot. Now, a lot has to do with kavanah. I mean, a woman who comes into, who views her role as, quote unquote, the junk role, right? And she views all this as, something that she would have. Clearly, that mitzvah kavanah is not there, and it's lacks it. That's not how the halacha proceeds. All right. Now, there's one other issue that I'd like to talk about a little bit. The Gemara states that, there is a category of demi-Jew, a half-Jew in halacha. Who is the half-Jew in halacha? A non-Jew, who sells himself as a slave to a Jew, it's called an Eved Nachri, is obligated in some mitzvot. The halacha learns out from what's called a Gzerah Shavah. Gzerah Shavah are words, unnecessary words in two sections, which by tradition, and tell us that they're linked together. And there is such a situation where two words, la, by shivcha, nochriya, and v'katav la sefer kritut, by a divorce, where the Gemara learns, la la gzeva shavat, teach me that a non-Jewish slave to a Jew is obligated in mitzvot like a woman. Okay? Now, as a result, very often in the Mishnah, the Mishnah will always link a slave and a woman because their halachic status is the same. I didn't finish the sentence. The halachic status is the same as far as obligation in itself. There are some slight differences, particularly Brit Milah, which he's obligated and she's not, because, as I pointed out, women are already circumcised halachically. However, for most things, they have the halachic, as far as obligation itself, they're the same. That doesn't mean that there's an identity between them. Okay? Now, let me just, what I'd like to do is read from the Torah Tmimah here. The Torah Tmimah, this section, this side of the page. The Torah Tmimah was written by Rav Baruch Epstein. He was the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, Rechiel Michal Epstein, who was a great scholar. The Torah Tmimah, in discussing women's obligation in mitzvot, discusses the Rav Yoh's explanation of why women are free from mitzvot, and with the Rav Yoh's explanation is that since a woman has obligations in the home, in the halacha, and using Saul Berman's variation of the Rav Yoh, that the halacha wanted to protect the woman's role in the home, therefore, the freed woman from the mitzvot aseh shem zman drama. Okay, now, let me just tell you a little bit about the Tartamima, how the Tartamima works. The Tartamima, this section up here, is on every pasuk in the Torah, he collects gemarot. All from all over Shas, and also from other Medrash Halacha, and he collects it on the pasuk, and the Gemara says, from this pasuk we learn the following. His job then is primarily to explain to you what was it in the text that Chazal saw to learn this particular halacha. He's trying to view the text not as Rashi or Ibn Ezra or Ramban do, as Parshanut HaMikra, not as interpretation of the text as a commentary, but rather as halachic Parshanut. He's looking at the text from the eyes of Chazal, who are trying to learn laws from the text. How did they see the text? What was it in the text? An extra vav, a syntax, a connection between two subjects. And he tries to teach you how to do that. It was a great deal of contribution. When I learned Gemara, for instance, never the Gemara calls it that. We learned Zala, I always whip out the Torah Tmima to see how did Chazal learn the text. An analogous work with a similar sort of goal in mind was the Malbim. The Malbim that you learn on Tanakh, if you learn him on Chumash, he's very different. Because on Chumash, he's not only interested there, he also gives you the interpretation of the text, but he's primarily interested, he uses as his jumping board, the Medrash Halacha. The Tanaic works that learn out Halachot from the text, and he there does the same sort of thing. How did the Midrash Halacha learn what it was in the verse that triggered Chazal's derivation? Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to start reading a little bit from the Tartamima. See number Membet at the bottom. The bottom is his explanation. Okay, you see where the Membet is? Okay. Under the Membet, yeah, when it says Membet, there's a note right in the bottom here, Membet. In Rashi script, right. Count down, 1, 2, 3, 4. Vitam, and you see, under the Membet, Membet is right here, in the text. Okay? Right here is Membet. Count down, Vitam. Okay? I'm sorry I didn't underline it. Okay, everybody with me? V'tam. V'tam tu nashim mitzvot asay shazman grama. Okay, there's a Rashi Tevot, shazman grama. What? Under the membet, count down, 1, 2, 3. Under the membet, count down 4 lines, V'tam. Okay? Troops, with me? Judge. The tam p'tun nashim mitzvot asay shazman grama katuv b'tosvot rid u'b'chidush ridva u'b'avud raham daf tet omad alef. Avud raham is not alone in this. I said Rav Yehuda, I meant the avud raham. Gabi b'rkat ha-mitzvah u'b'sefer malamed ha-talmidim per parashat lech lecha, this is lecha. Huva b'cholbo, the kolbo brings it, simon. It means there's a broad, there are a whole view, spectrum, a whole, there are several of the Rishonim who quote this reason. Mishom, what's the reason? Shanashim ein zman masur b'yideyem b'rushutam. A woman who's in the home doesn't have her time always free in her hands. Ki mishubo abadot lehen lebaal, because they have obligations to her husband or to the family. V'im kein isha lechayev lechayvan b'mitzvah, you can obligate in the mitzvah, shazman grama. Because at a particular time, maybe her husband will ask her to do something. That's the reason. So there will be a clash, and the Torah said, your priorities are in the home. So this is a very original explanation. It's not so simple. Okay, because that's why unmarried women now? I mentioned this before. You can't say, what would you want to say? Because the majority of women are free, therefore all free. Even the chalal nashim tuvot shuv lo plug. Therefore, we should make a distinction. By the way, this answer I said is given by many, many commentaries. He refuses it. Shavei kahai gavna amru b'kiddushin lamed avadei. Because the exact same is true in kiddushin daf lamed avadei. Le'inyan kibud av, by respect for the parents, shanashim tuvot mitnei shavashut baleim aleihen. The women are freed from respect, from doing positive actions of respect for their parents, right? Because why? Because they have requirements at home. The Gemara clearly says, the Gemara clearly, explicitly says, as soon as she is a free agent, she has no obligations at home, then she is free from this. She is obligated from this respect. We've never heard that women, as soon as they become divorced or become single again, that therefore that they have to start keeping mitzvot aseh shezman grama. V'gam im kein hisvara lo hayat sarich hagmara leleh p'tura mitfilin k'mo b'kibud av. He says the Gemara should have told us this. All right. V'af. V'af gam zot enon mevuah. So this is also not clear in Lefize. And he gives another reason that we didn't mention. Mashikatav, we're now in that second paragraph where the big V'af is. Okay? V'af gam zot enon mevuah Lefize. It's also not clear. Mashikatav kim ad kol rishon. What all the Rishonim say, and we're going to learn about this later this evening, hopefully. Di imrotzot nashim lachmir latzman. A woman says, I want to sit this way. So the Gemara says, no problem of adding a mitzvah. We'll talk about what he's referring to. What's this business that they have a right to be machmir, to do the mitzvah, even though they're not obligated? Achrei, he ain't. Came to van biyadan machmir b'zeh. He says, look, if the reason is because maybe it'll clash with what her husband asks or what the family asks, why does she have a right to be machmir? Maybe it'll clash. If the Torah freed you because maybe it'll clash, why does the woman have the right, without consulting her husband, to go ahead and make a decision, I'm going to be machmir? Maybe it'll clash. Hello? I see you, I lost you. The point he's saying is that the woman is a free agent. She doesn't have to ask anybody whether she wants to be machmir or not. No Rishon says she has to go and ask her family, is it all right? I want to be machmir now. She's a perfectly free agent to do it. And if the whole reason is because she has to worry about what's going to happen in the home, why is it that why doesn't she have to go consult her family first? Get permission, quote unquote. And he says, nobody says a woman has to get permission. She makes the decision for herself. So what is this? Sort of her time is, she's perfect free agent to do it as she likes. V'yoteh ha'valei la'poskim l'chadesh, di'im ba'aleihem no'nim lehem v'shut l'kayim mitzvotesei shuzman grama. Then if her husband says it's all right, then she can go ahead and do it. But nobody said that she has to ask her husband. She goes ahead and does it. Her husband then asks her, all right, so that's a problem. So she'll have to work it out. But it's not as if she has to consult her husband. So there's no element here that the reason why she's free is because she's subservient to her husband. Her time is her husband's. See, the way that that these Rishonim seem to imply is that her time belongs to her husband. It's not so. She's a totally free agent. That is, okay, there's a priority. So now, how did Saul Berman solve this problem? Saul Berman solves the problem by saying the Torah wanted to make it easier for her. It's a little different, right? The Torah is trying to give her the freedom to do what she likes. If she wants, the Torah didn't obligate her so that she has the freedom at any time. If she wants to do the mitzvah, she can do the mitzvah. And if she doesn't want to do the mitzvah because she feels that she has to devote time to her family, she can do that. Well, that's all right. Then there's no question. Okay? But the way the Rishonim presented it, where sort of she's subservient to her husband, she owes her, then it doesn't work out. So Saul Berman's spin on it changes it. Changes it, there's no question.
It still could, I think. What? You could still say that she's subservient to her husband, and that and she takes it upon herself to do the mitzvot, but it's obvious that when there's a conflict, that she has the
torah. Yeah, well, she had...
No, but so then she is allowed to take...
Whose time? Whose time?
It's her husband's time, according to Chazal.
Then she has no right to be machmir without her
consulting.
Without consulting him? Excuse me.
His list of things for her to do, she finishes, and asks that.
Okay, let me put it slightly differently. Let me put it the way. Okay, this argument is stated in slightly different fashion. I didn't bring it by Rav Uziel. Okay, his Mishpat is one of the first Sephardic chief rabbis of Israel. He was a Sephardic chief rabbi at the same time as Rav Herzog, right? Rav Uziel says, if I work for somebody else, right, and all of a sudden I want to do something, Bali, I have an obligation, my time belongs to somebody else. Do I have a right to go ahead and say, I want to go Xerox now, I'm sorry? No, I have to ask permission to go to Xerox. So if a woman's time belonged to her husband, then what does she do? How can she go ahead without asking permission? And then later, if her husband catches her, then she's got to work it out.
But how? Contracted. Like if I work with someone, and I have to finish A, B, and C, and then.
Excuse me. So the question is the halacha. I mean, so the answer is that in a marriage relationship, we assume you're a mature adult. You have certain priorities. You know, when you got married, you have these priorities. You'll work it out. You're a mature adult, and if it doesn't work, so you'll learn from the mistake and not do it again, or we'll work it out some other way. But it's not as if her time is her husband. She's not a quote-unquote slave to her husband. It's not her husband's time. She's not even a worker by her husband. She has responsibilities. It's her decision to work out those responsibilities.
But because, I'm sorry, but you said if her husband catches her, she has to work it out.
Because in a marriage relationship, there are certain responsibilities that are understood in a marriage relationship.
So she doesn't have to do something when there's much she can do it later or before, is that what
you're saying? Exactly. That's a question. I'm talking about a normative relationship. I'm not saying the husband says, I want you to cook my supper now at 4:32 and not at 4:33.
But there are cases.
Yeah, there are cases like that, right?
He's saying,
according to that presentation, he's got problems. And I want you to know, he never answers it.
He doesn't.
No. He says he doesn't understand it. That in and of itself can't be the bottom line. Let me just show you, I'll show you what he says. He goes on a little bit of discussion. I'll tell you what he says a little in a second. You see the second column?
Yeah.
Like 6 lines from the bottom, V'nireh, where the line, read what he says. V'nireh b'chlal la'hazbir svarat ha'rishonim ha'nal. It seems to me to explain their explanation. D'bayi la'hazbir gzeret ha'katuv. And this is God's decree. And they're attempting to explain God's decree. Aval ena yisodit. It's not fundamental. V'lo aleha banui yisod ikar hadin. And it's not on that reason that the law is based. Now this is what he's essentially saying. You have to make a distinction between the law and the reason given for the law. Okay? The Torah never gave us a reason. The Torah said women are free from passing a man their time determined. Okay? These were attempts by Rishon to explain. He says, I'm not happy with the reason. Look, I discussed last week with you the three reasons, and I told you I wasn't happy with each of the reasons. Each of the reasons doesn't work out. I'm trying to focus in now more on the role-playing idea. That's why I'm going back to the discussion. Because we raise the issue of role-playing. We also want to talk about a little bit about this comparison to an Eved. Focusing, that's why I come back now. So he's not happy with the reason, and he's living with the question. He says, I don't understand. I don't know the rationale. I think Saul Berman's approach is a little bit better, because Saul Berman's approach is that a woman, we saw last week, Saul Berman said the woman is in charge of her time. The Torah wanted to give her the option when she enters a marriage relationship, to give her the option either to do the mitzvah or not do the mitzvah. If she feels that she can do the mitzvah, she decides to do the mitzvah. She feels she can't fulfill her obligations of that without, but it's her decision. As a mature girl, to decide how she wants to do it.
I discussed
it last week. The Gemara learns it out from Philip. We talked about that. The Rambam, I said, learns that it's a Kabbalah. Okay? And the Gemara is now searching. And I pointed out that it's very clear that they knew the halacha way back, and the Gemara was searching for reason. But ultimately, the Gemara learns it from Philip. Okay. Now, what he does, however, he says that this reason, however, does work out nicely in trying to explain why a slave and a woman have the same halachic status as far as commandment and mitzvah are concerned. Why does he say? He says, because if we say that that a woman's time is partially dedicated to something else, she has obligations to the home, she has obligations to her children, obligations to her husband, okay? And that's why the Torah freed her. That's the same reason that's applicable to a slave. Because the slave also has obligations in the home and the family and the like, and the Torah decided, therefore, to give him a sort of a semi-status. Okay? That's how he explains it. Now, I want you to understand, okay, I want you to understand that essentially, that the point that even according to him, there is a fundamental difference. A very fundamental, even if we say that they have the same mitzvot, there's a very fundamental difference between them, and that's what I'd like you to see, read in the Heschel Shem. Yes. Yes. We have a case of a very famous slave, Tuvi, the slave of Rabbi Gamliel, who slept in a sukkah.
But then you're saying that this is from your Eved
Right.
But then you could say
somebody
Eved
Ivri. Right. So an Eved Ivri. That's a very good question.
So
let me keep asking. Good. Keep talking.
So then you would think that he has obligations to his owner, but then he also has obligations to
That's an excellent question. And according to what the Torah Tamima says, it doesn't make sense. Why? Because the halacha is, okay, the halacha is that a slave, a Jew who is a slave to someone else, whose time is also totally dedicated, has to daven three times a day, has to do all the mitzvahs of his master, and the fact that he has time obligations doesn't free him from that. So if you want to say because a woman has time, so that should be understood in a marriage relationship. A woman's got to do something like that. Okay. Again, Saul Berman doesn't have that problem because Saul Berman says that she can pick and choose. And the halacha says she can pick and choose, but the halacha understands, yes, that a male Jewish slave's got to do all his mitzvah. And his master's got to take. Now, part of the reason is, you can say this is part of the contractual relationship, that a Jew is a slave to a Jew, is understood not as a slave, but as a full-time worker. He's a worker, he works full-time for you. He's a living. He lives in the house, and he works in your support, and he's a full-time worker. But other than that, you know, when I hire a worker, I have to give him time off to daven. Right? I have to give him time off to daven and cut. So, that's part of it. But the question is, Then the whole his argument falls down because the woman too. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't. Okay. Your criticism is right.
But you could say that the nature of the things that the woman needs to do are can't be interrupted by a specific mitzvah. Like there are things that are imminent, and she doesn't know exactly when the baby's going to wake up for nursing and things like that. So so it's more difficult for her.
Okay.
Whereas an Eved Ivri can say, well, now I'm going to do this
Can I ask you a question? I see you're
like that.
A woman has to go here, McGillery. Right? But these are all examples of mitzvot asay shazman gamawat halacha required. She wants white Hanukkah candle, she wants to hear Megillah, and the baby's crying. What does she do? Excuse me. This is a very serious question. I'm not making fun. The answer is, he missed the minute. Nachon. So she won't light Hanukkah candles now, or she'll have to say, hold the baby, light the Hanukkah candles and get the baby back. Right? Or Megillah reading, she'll get someone to read Megillah for her. Mr. Devitt. So you tell me she can't be Mr. Devitt to eat a meal with somebody, she can't be Mr. Devitt to
You're compounding the number, not the quality of quantity. I mean,
like she's Mr. Devitt. Admit. But somehow, I think that if women were obligated, they could do it. I'd like to see that. Let me explain something to you. Let me. I agree with you. But that's why I like Saul Berman's approach. I think it's a very minor approach. The halacha wanted, the way he views it, his presentation is, the halacha wanted to make the woman's home life as a mother as flexible as possible. Okay? Yes. Now the question, let me tell you what the difference is. Unfortunately, most women aren't raised to think, you know, we really should do all of this work. If we can't, the Torah's given us an out. That's not how women are raised. Now, I don't know whether that is a social problem or a halachic problem, right? But it's clear that the Torah did give them the mitzvah, and we'll have to talk about this too. There are certain terms I can't talk about with you until we get a little bit further, and then we'll discuss the question again. Okay? And tomorrow, beginning next year, we'll discuss this question again. After we've gone through the question, what does it mean that a woman is freed from mitzvah? What is the technicality? You'll see what was bothering me. And then we'll come back to this one.
Excuse me, I have a question also.
Just one question.
One, in the meantime, what is the status of, let's say, a kehila where women, that they do sit in the sukkah. They decide that they want to sit in the sukkah, and they've been doing it for years. And then a woman decides she doesn't want to do it because she feels that it's pogem, and she can't do her obligations from the family.
Well, usually these are
individuals.
This is a very complicated problem. We'll talk about this. Yeah, let's talk about when we get to the discussion about women who accept upon themselves and so on. I'll give you a very simple question, which is the question that Avadi Yosef dealt with. A woman hears Kiyah Shofar every year. Her kid is running 104 temperature, 40 temperature. And she can't go to shul. She won't hear. What does she do?
The question is she obligated to hear it later?
Is she obligated to hear later? Is she free? There has to be Hattarat Nedarim. Yes, let's talk about this question a little bit later. It's a good question, yes. Okay, the fundamental point that I want to make now is that, let me read you from what's called, I'm reading, this is from a book called Torah HaRogatshaver. There was a Rabbi Yosef Rosen, who was killed in the Holocaust, was one of the outstanding minds in European Jewry just before the war. And he writes as follows. And it's not in what you're reading now. Tu ha'isha mi mitzvot yiduot. Eino dome b'mahuto l'ptu ha'eved b'mitzvot eved. The exemption of women from mitzvot has nothing, and it's not identical to the exemption of slaves from mitzvot. Shekein p'tur ha'eved novea mimenu michisrono she'eno yisraeli shalem. The reason why he's given half mitzvot, says the Rogatcher Rosen is because he is a half Jew. Ukemo she'amru eved mutar b'imo mutar b'bito yatzar mechlal kuti ulechlal Yisrael oba. There's all sorts of exemptions. He's allowed to have all sorts of marital relationships that are forbidden to Jews. He's left in the non-Jewish world, but he really hasn't entered the Jewish world. That's why the Torah exempted him from a whole category of mitzvot, to show that he's not a Jew. The Ptura of women from these mitzvot, it's not because that she's lacking anything in her jewelry. She came ish. And I told her, put that, but the Torah saw fit to free her. Okay? Now, let's see the same thing with Rav Soloveitchik. What we're going to read now, okay, in this page, is an article that Rav Soloveitchik, that Rav Soloveitchik's what's called Talmud Muva, Rav Herschel Schachter, spent many, 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 many years studying with the Rav. And the Rav was very, very close to the Herschel Schachter. And what I'd like to do is, this is an article in which he deals with the concept of tzniut, of modesty. Not modesty in the halakhic sense of how long the sleeve should be, but a modesty in action and behavior. And he says that a person, male, female, is supposed to be tzanua, supposed to be modest in his behavior. Now let's go on, and we're on page, this page where the name appears on the top. In this column, the second column where there's a mark. Okay, but there's a mark. And here Rav Schachter writes as follows. He's dealing with the problem about women counting for a minion. Okay, that's the problem he's dealing with, but it's related. V'nei yesh shetoim lomar shema shehanashim einam mitztarfot leminyan. The reason why women don't count for a minion, hu machmat pechitut al gatan, is because they're not as important b'nei chachmei Torah. Because the Chachamim didn't feel that they were important enough to count for a minyan. The dum yudev, it's like a slave. Uchumosha patra torat anashim et avadim mitzat asay shazman gama. Just as the Torah freed them, women and slaves, for the positive commandments of time determined, the shneim shavim b'otah davgan lemuchab dushat yisrael. Because of the same, people want to argue, that's how the Torah maintained, that they were the same in their sanctity. ושמעתי מרבנו הגון רב יושע דוב סולובייצ'יק שליטה שאין הדבר כן. This is not so at all. דנשים שוות הן לגברים בדרגת קדושת ישראל שלהם. They are equivalent in their sanctity. אלא שנפטרו ממצוות עשה שלה. But the Torah is suffering. Whatever the reasons were to free them from past commands which time determined. ולדעת הרמב״ם אין הדבר כן בעבד כנעני. As far as clearly according to the Rambam, this is not true when it comes to a non-Jewish slave. He only has some of the sanctity of Israel. And as far as the mitzvot, those things that he's not obligated to, he's like a goy, completely like a goy. The nafkum min the mina, the dina, what would be the out? What's the halachic difference? The fima the pasuk harama kedat Rabbi Nutam. Now we're going to talk about this today. Kind of the way the Ramah passes like the Rabbi Nutam. The noshim rashod mevarech a mitzvah taseh shazman gama. The woman can not only do those mitzvot which are not obligated, but they can even make a bracha, a kind of Ashkenazi usage. Dahainu dafke benashim. It's only by women. Shicholot b'ma be'emet kitshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. That women can say, you sanctified us in the mitzvot and commanded us. As far as understanding what the word commanded us, we'll talk about later. Kitshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu anotila ulah. D'inyan kedusha gidvo chiyu b'mitzvot. She's part of Klai Yisrael. Klai Yisrael got a mitzvot. She can say, "Asher kitshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu." והיות שאנשים שוות בקדושתם לגברים, since women are equal in their sanctity to males, חיובם במצוות שלהם, their obligation in מצוות is complete. Okay, we're going to come back to our Soloveitchik. The Soloveitchik analysis that women were obligated, that are part of Klal Yisrael who got the mitzvot, men got it as obligations, women got it as options, but they all got it at Sinai mitzvot. They all got the same mitzvot. Each one with under its own stipulations.
This only works for Ashkenazim.
That's it only works, that doesn't necessarily work with Ashkenazim. The analysis is correct. The question is about the bracha. And we'll see why the Sephardi, but the analysis is correct. It hinges on understanding what the word mitzvah means. And we'll talk about this. That's what I hope to get today. A little bit. Okay? Masha ein kein evet kanani, which is not true for a non-Jewish slave. Shemagabe netilat lulav l'mashal, as far as shaking the lulav, dino kenachil legamrei. Shechasero lo haktushat Yisrael. He's lacking the sanctity. Legabe mitzvah tesei shazman grama. Vafilu lefidat Rabbi Notam. Even by Rabbi Notam, who says that women can make mitzvot, even though not specifically obligated, who eino yochel avarech asher mitzvah tesei shazman grama. Kamo shanochi eino yochel avarech v'lomar asher kitshono mitzvotav. Just as a non-Jew can't make it, so a demi-Jew can't make it. And those things that he's not obligated, he's a goy. So that's a fundamental difference. The reason why I bring this is very often people say, it says, mentions women and a slave in the same breath. Yes, it mentions them because they have the same status as far as what mitzvot they're obligated on. But the point I'm trying to drive home here is that it's a woman is up here. Right? The Torah freed her from certain mitzvot. The goy, the nochri, is down here as far as Kedoshet Yisrael. He's moved up a little bit because he's got a little bit of sanctity, so the Torah gave him partial mitzvot. The Gemara learns out that the category of the mitzvot that he's obligated are the same, but it's for totally different reasons. And they should not be in the same place.
These are mitzvot tasein, he's also obligated?
Mitzvot asei shomein hazman kala, yes. Yes, he is. He's obligated for some of the mitzvot. He's not allowed to violate shalom mitzvot. Okay. Now, as far as, please keep this because, well, I don't know, I'll Xerox it again because the other side deals with why women don't count for minyan, and when we get to that, we'll have to whip it out again. Don't worry, I'll Xerox it again. But add it to your collection. All right. Now, okay, let's now move on to page 50 in the book. We're on chapter 4. Okay, so to summarize, so a lot of time discussing women of mitzvot tasei shazman grama, rationale, and okay, but the bottom line is that women are free from positive commandments which are time determined. Now, what does it mean when we say women are free from positive commandments at time determined? What exactly does that mean? Can they do it if they want to? Can they make a bracha if they want to? All right. Are they obligated to make the bracha, or do they have the just as they have the option to do the mitzvah, they can choose whether they want to do the bracha. These are all questions we have to deal with today. There are four cases in the Gemara dealing with a woman's option to do mitzvah. Case number one appears at the bottom of page 50. Okay, it appears as Rav Ellenson points out in the Safra. In Vayikra, it also appears in the Gemara Chagiga, after Zayin on the day. The Gemara goes as follows. Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem, Adam ki yakiv mikem, if a person brings a korban, v'samach yado al rosh ha'olah. He has to put his hands on the olah. Now, putting your hands on the olah does not mean touching the animal. It means leaning on them with all your strength. Says the Gemara, the Gemara says, B'nei Yisrael samchim, ve'ein b'not Yisrael samchot. Men are obligated to do smicha, women are not obligated to do smicha. Now, let me explain to you something. Normally, if you're not obligated to do smicha, you're not allowed to do smicha. Because you're not allowed to use an animal. When I'm leaning on the animal, if it's a mitzvah of the Torah obligated, now this is not any animal, this is a korban. I'm not allowed to use, it's called me'ila b'kodshim. I'm not allowed to use kodshim, a sanctified object, for my own personal use. If I'm obligated, the Torah says, lean on the animal, support yourself on the animal, that's right, that's the mitzvah, that's part of the avodah. But if you're not obligated, then you cannot allow to, because that's called me'ila. You're using the animal improperly. Okay? So it's not a trivial question. Now there comes the question. Rabbi Yosef, so that's the, that is the Sefra, the Mishnah. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Amrin, Hanashim Samchot Reshut. The women have the option to do smicha. Even though it's a problem, it's not trivial that they can do smicha. Amar Rabbi Yosef, which part of it goes to the kohen, part of it goes to the mizbeach, part of it is eaten by the owners of the korban. It's like a korban pesach. The shlomim korban pesach is one of the korban of shlomim. Votzeinu leezrat nashim v'samchu alav nashim. And the women put their hands on the animal. Lo b'pnei she'smicha b'nashim. Not because women are obligated in smicha. L'pnei nachat ruach shel nashim. We wanted to make our women happy. So we gave them the option to do smicha. They did smicha.
And all the
korbanot,
or only the one that
didn't eat? Only the korbanot. No, korbanot that require smicha. Not all korbanot require smicha, but those korbanot. He's talking about a case of a korban, a shlamim that required smicha. The husbands, the way the Rishonim understand it, the husbands went in, they did the smicha, and they brought it out for the wives did the smicha too.
I mean, the korban which is not eaten, which is completely...
An ola?
Yeah.
I think the one who brings it has to do smicha. It depends. I don't know. So I don't. I plead ignorance. I don't know exactly which korban require, which korban don't. Okay. I should know better, but I don't. Okay. So, you see, here's the first example. Of despite the fact that it's problematic, and I told you why it's problematic, Rabbi Yossi, okay, again, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon hold, Nashim Somchot Reshut. The women have the right to go ahead and do smicha. Let's continue now with the second case. Second case has to do with blowing shofar. Okay? Is one allowed to blow shofar on a yontif? Let's say on Sukkot. Blow shofar? No, it's also blow shofar. I mean, if you're not obligated to blow shofar, you're not allowed to blow shofar. Right? It's also, it's also a drop on it. But it's also.
What about?
You're doing a mitzvah, but you're not allowed to do something.
But even if you're not, you're allowed to blow shofar just to see if you can.
To learn, to in order to do it. Stop the play. Ein Mishnah, ein ma'akfin et ha'tinokot militkoach. You don't stop the little children from blowing. Avol mitaskin imahem ad shiyumadu. But you are mitaskin with them so they'll learn how to blow. That you try to direct their blowing the shofar in a direction they don't stop blow the shofar, but they're learning how to blow. So the Gemara says, ha nashima. The implication seems to be that you don't stop the children. What do you stop the women? Because women are not obligated to get shofar too. And you'd say, well, why are they allowed to blow on shofar? I mean, there's no benefit of their blowing. They're not obligated. What is this business of blowing shofar? It's also midrabbana. It's time to blow shofar. Vatanya ein ma'akvin lo et anashim v'lo et anitina tot midat ko b'yom tov. That you don't prevent, you prevent neither the women nor the children from blowing shofar on Yom Tov. Amar Abaye, lo kash, no problem. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, the view that said it was that the women shouldn't blow shofar, right? That the only people you don't stop are the children. But the implication is that what? That the women you do stop, that's the view of Rabbi Yehuda, right? Ha Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, the one that says the women can blow shofar all they want to on Yom Tov, that's Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya, B'nei Yisrael somchin, v'en b'not Yisrael somchot divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The view that we saw above, in the first case we gave you, that said the women can't lean on the korban, that's Rabbi Yehuda's view. Rabbi Yehuda said, yes, women are excluded, when they're exempted, they're out of the mitzvah. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon omrim, nashim somchot v'shut, the women have the right to lean on the korban. Similarly, when it comes to blowing shofar, they can blow shofar too. There is a mitzvah value in their doing, performing that blowing shofar. There is a mitzvah value. If there were no value, they wouldn't be allowed to. But there is a mitzvah value in what they're doing. We'll talk about this a little bit later, okay? Now turn to page 60. Now this is a totally different section. This is case number 3. This is in chapter 5, number 2. Okay? Page 60. Okay. Case number 2 has to do with women putting on tefillin and women going up to the Beit HaMikdash for regel. Okay, remember, males are obligated. Yira'et kol zchucha. Shlosha pamim bashana. Yira'et kol zchucha. 3 times a year, aliyah regel is an obligation on the males. Okay? Let's do the second section. We'll come back. We'll learn this mission again when we come back, talk about women putting on talus and tefillin. But now we're learning it for the purpose of understanding mitzvot aseh shazman grama, whether women are allowed to do it. Tanya. Are you with me? Second paragraph. Tanya. Michal bat Kushi. Michal, the daughter of the Kushite, and the Gemara understands this to mean bat Shaul. This is Michal, the wife of King David, the daughter of King Saul. Haita manachat tefillin. She used to wear tefillin. The lo michu ba chachamim. The chachamim didn't object. Vishto shel Yonah Haita ola laregel, v'lo michlo la chachamim, and the chazal didn't object. Okay. Alma kasavre mitzat aseh shelo hazman gramai. So you see that they hold that these, that tefillin and aliyah laregel are mitzat aseh shelo hazman gramai. Shelo hazman, I apologize. Yes, Shemitza says, Shalom Hazman Grama. And therefore women are obligated. Therefore women are obligated to put on tefillin, okay. And women are obligated to be on the Yalla Regal. What? Yeah, that's right. So, maybe this mission disagrees.
But if they're obligated, why would you be the issue of not objecting?
What?
They're obligated, there'd be no question.
They didn't object. What?
Because they're obligated? They didn't object.
Look, it's problematic in the first place because the pasuk says, "Shalosh pamim b'shana yira'e kol tzchucha." Says males. No diuk, nothing. It says males. So how could you think of the other angle? Women are obligated in. So the Gemara says, because the Gemara, you have to understand the internal working of this Gemara for a different purpose than the completely. Anyway. The Dilma Savalak Rabbi Yossi. Now, maybe the reason why they didn't object is because they hold like Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Damar nashim samchat reshut. Because even though women are not obligated, they have the option to do it. The ilo temach is if you don't say that ishto shel Yona hayta'ona vega v'lo michuba. They didn't object. Your question. Is there anybody who doesn't say the Aliyah LeRegel is a Paschal commandment? Who's done that? It's clearly Paschal commandment. Clearly says males. You know, Ela Kasava Rishut. You see that they hold it's a Rishut. Okay. Now we have four cases, right? Smicha, the first case. Let's go back to page 50. Again. We have Smicha. We have Tkiat Shofar. We have Tfilin, Aliyah LeRegel. In all four cases, we saw that Rabbi Yehuda maintains that the women are not allowed to do them. If they're exempted, they're not allowed to do them. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon held that if they're exempted, but they have the option to do it. Okay. Now the question becomes, why would Rabbi Yehuda say that you're forbidden? They're not allowed to. And the whole question is, michu, lo michu, did they object, didn't object? What's the problem here? Why shouldn't you be allowed to do that? Let's read Rashi on page 652 on the top. We didn't talk about bracha. Good point, but we didn't talk about bracha yet. Okay? So Rashi says, Hanashim makvi, we prevent the women from blowing shofar. Dipturot legamre, they're completely freed. The mitzvat asei shazman gramahu, because blowing shofar is a pasuk commandment which is time determined. The chitaki, if they should blow, ika bal tosif, there's a violation of adding to the Torah. Now, before we in order to understand Rashi, I have to explain to you what bal tosif, what the rules are in the bal tosif. Okay. The Torah says as follows, Et kol hadavar asher anochi mitzavei etchem, everything that I command you, oto tishmuru lasot, you shall do it, lo tosifu alav, lo tigrom imen. Don't add to it, don't detract. There's another pasuk that, by the way, that says a similar formation, and there it says, here, in the quote, verse I brought to you, which is Dvarim Yud Gimel Tedvav, it says in the singular. And there's a different pasuk that says, Lo tosifu alav velo tigra'u. So the plural language, and the question is why you need both. And the Gaon Mevilna says one is on the individual and one is on the courts, the Jewish courts. You think the Jewish courts have a right to add mitzvot? They don't have a right to add mitzvot either. Everybody's going to jump up and say, but what do you mean they don't have a right to add mitzvot? They added Hanukkah, they added Megillah, they added a whole bunch of rabbinic mitzvot. There are seven rabbinic mitzvot that we have. The answer is, they don't have a right to add biblical mitzvot. They can't come along and say, the Torah said that they can't do. But they can say, look, the Torah gave us authority to enact. It says, go to the Chachamim, your generation. We're telling you to do this. Okay? Not because it's biblical. It's not biblical. It's rabbinic. These are rabbinic things we want you to do. Okay. That authority they have. But they can't add to the Beit Din, can't add to the Torah from a mitzvah. Okay. There are four types of adding to mitzvot. For one is Hosafat Mitzvah Chadasha. Person comes along and says, God told me that it's a mitzvah to stand on your head. Three times a day. Okay? Besides being crazy, he's over Baal Tov. Right? So that's, if it's a kavana shehu midoraita, if he's saying the biblical commandment, he's violated Baal Tosif. If it's a kavana zon drabanon, that's not Baal Tosif. Okay. Now, hosafa bezman, suppose I add in the time. Okay? There's a mitzvah whose time is a specific time, and you want to add, you say the mitzvah doesn't go 7 days long, the mitzvah goes 8 days long. Okay? For instance, if you put on tefillin on Shabbos with the intention, because you believe that you, that the Torah obligated. Let's say, you put on tefillin. You sit in the sukkah. Okay, it's another time. You sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, because and what we there is Shra. Sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Because you say the Torah wants you to sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. The Torah says that 7 days. Well, God wants 8 days. That's Bal Tosa. That's something that's mine. So you can ask me how the Mechut starts. You sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret.
Nobody says it's day all right.
What?
They don't say it's day all right.
Because you're saying it's a suffix. You're saying maybe today's the seventh day, maybe it's the eighth day. Say, I'm not going ahead and say God wanted me to sit 7 days. But the Shmini Atzeret, I don't know if it's the eighth day or the seventh day. So I'm doing it to cover, to make sure to cover all possibilities. But I don't deny what the Torah said. The Torah said 7 days.
Nowadays, there's technology which knows with you. Why don't they take it off?
Okay, that is really way beyond the shir. Way beyond the shir. And I'll tell you why they don't take it off. Why? Because we'll know. I mean, the Chatam Sofer already asked it. They had the telegraph. And he said, we'll know instantaneously when Kiddush HaChodesh is. There won't be any doubts. He doesn't give a satisfactory answer, but I'll tell you the answer. My father said, we don't want it. We want ghosts and nothing but ghosts. Okay. I mean, technically, you're right. When the Sanhedrin comes back, we'll take it off. But you ask me whether we can take it off. The Chassam Sofer seems to imply that we might be able to. But you don't want it. Okay. Excuse me?
Why is it not so in that case?
Where?
Now.
Because we do it because of suffering. Because Chazal instituted do it because the time may come and we might be besuffered. Might be besuffered.
Oh, because it's origin.
Because of
origin. So if
you're asking me what your
reasons.
That's right. You do it for the wrong reasons. That you have to say, today's the eighth day. That's part of the reason why in the Chutzar, the Gemara says, Yitubi yet vinim bruchen lo mebrachina. We sit, but we don't make a bracha. Because the bracha is a suffix to a banner. Right? It's a doubt, so that we don't make the bracha, but the Mishnah is in the suffix. Okay. What about, is there a problem about Tosef Safa Ba'asiyah? Suppose the Torah said to shake the lula. Right? To take the lula, I shake it. Then 2 minutes later, I said, stop watching. I'm going to shake the lulav again, right? Is there a Hosafa Ba'asiyya? So the answer is no. Because there is no Hosafa Ba'asiyya. I can do it several times. And that's why we blow shofar, how many shofar 100 times, 100 kolot, we're only obligated maybe 30, maybe 9, 10. I mean, we add a lot of kolot. That's not, and I think the reason is, because I have little qualms about the analysis of this. I think that we add more kolot because we want to do it better. We want to do it more. But even so, that even if I don't, we add extra kolot. It's not considered a Bal Tosef. But there is a Bal Tosef. It's Hosafa B'min, the type. For instance, if the Torah said for lulav and etor you need 4 minim. I want an apple. Right? That's Bal Tosef. That is Bal Tosef. Or the Torah says that you put tzitzis on the four furthest corners of your garment. You have a four-corner garment, you put on 4 tzitzis. If you have a five-corner garment, you put on 4 tzitzis. If you have a six-corner garment, 4 tzitzis. The four furthest corners. I say you put it on 6 corners. Right? Every corner you got to put it on. That's Bal Tosef. That is Bal Tosef. Rashi seems to hold that there is another category in Bal Tosef. Hosafa Ishim, persons. That if a person says, the Torah exempted me, I come along and I say, but I'm obligated. That's also Bal Tosef. Okay? Women coming along, and this is Rashi according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why did Rabbi Yehuda? Now I'm trying to explain to you Bal Tosef. Why did Rabbi Yehuda come along and say it's forbidden for women to do mitzvah that they're free from? Says Rashi, Because Rabbi Yehuda holds this is a form of Baal Tosi. You're taking a person who's exempted, and now you're saying this person is saying, I'm obligated. Okay? That would be Rabbi Yehuda's view, and that's forbidden. Okay? You don't like that? Why do you find that strange? Let me say that this is essentially the according to this analysis I've given so far, this is fundamentally the difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, when a woman is exempted from the mitzvah, she's excluded. She's not excluded from the mitzvah. She's like a goy. When she's exempted, she's exempted.
But she may.
That is, the question is, Rabbi Yehuda says, you, a woman, not having a mitzvah, she has no relationship to a mitzvah. There's no relation to a mitzvah. Okay? There's no relationship. So she now comes along and says, the Torah didn't give me a mitzvah, I say there's no, I'm obligated. That's Baal Tov Sif. Rabbi Yossi says, that's not the way the Torah worked. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say, Rabbi Yehuda, when the Torah said women were free, that's what they meant. They didn't mean they were excluded from the mitzvah. They really gave them the option to do the mitzvah. It's reshut. What does reshut mean? Reshut means I have the option. But they're part of the mitzvah. They're part of the mitzvah. Now, this analysis, what? Her onus depends on God. I mean, the question is, what is she saying? What?
She's not saying I'm nichayev. She's saying I choose to do this. It's not the same as I have. No, but
she comes along. Excuse me. A goy comes along and sees a lulav and esrei, and he picks up the lulav and esrei and says, "Boy, is this fun?" Is there a problem with that? Is the goy over in Baal Tosif? He's not from Baal Tosif. He says, "Boy, is this fun?" If a woman comes and picks up the lulav and esrei and she says, "Boy, this is fun," she's not over in Baal Tosif. Even got Rabbi Yehuda. There's no reason why she can't pick up a little lesser. Rabbi Yehuda is only talking about the case the woman says, okay, she says, Hinini Mukhanam Zuman the kindness of the same in the Torah. She wants to do a mitzvah.
Well,
she's doing the Shem Shemayim.
She wants extra credit points.
She wants extra credit points, right.
It's not the same way. You know, she got her A of it. She wants the.
You know what? Plus. Let me explain to you what she's arguing. She's arguing that maybe there's an in-between stage. Maybe this analysis that I've given you all along is not really exactly right on, because there's a possibility where I'd say, you know, I'm really not obligated. I'm really not obligated, but I want to volunteer to do something that I clearly see God wants. God wants Jews to do certain mitzvot. I'm not obligated, but I'd like to do it as well. I'd like to volunteer for the God's army. I'm not obligated, I want to volunteer. Okay? Now, that sort of is an in-between relationship. So let me say there is somebody who says exactly your analysis. That says, when is it Asur? When she says, I'm obligated. But if she wants to say, I'm not obligated, I'm just volunteering. Like Chazal could say, I'm obligated, Midrabanan, righteous act as a minute, I want to volunteer for God's army. Can she do it? Now, some argue maybe she can, and that's not Baal Tosif. By the same token, maybe a goy could do it too. Right? A goy could do it on those conditions as well. There's no difference. Could she violate an issur? Could she blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Could she do smicha?
But if you know that, then you can also argue that, let's say, a mitzvah for Kohanim, every man could decide, well, I'm going to do it for Kohanim too.
Good question. Just hold. Okay? Let's go back. According to your analysis, can she volunteer? Her volunteering for God's army, does that allow her to do Isurim? That's an American woman. She could not. So the bottom line would be, as far as the four cases that are used, because you're not asked to blow shofar on Yantar. It's us to blow shofars on Yantar, but you're make no tomato blitz cliche. Okay? You can't do that on Yantar. You can't be somech. You can't. A man can because he can do it as a mitzvah action. And a woman can be mosif on Rosh Hashanah. Now, once you're allowed to blow shofar, you're allowed to blow shofar as much as you want to. It's part of the mitzvah action. It's being mosif in the Kola. But a one who's not obligated at all, there's no related to the mitzvah, he can't blow shofar. She can't blow shofar.
But if there's nobody to blow shofar for her, she's
not
blow it for herself.
Wait a second. Hold on. We're losing the strands here. You're thinking of tachlis. You're asking me, can, that's a halacha. I'm trying to understand Rabbi Yehuda now. Rabbi Yehuda says that a woman can, she's excluded from the shofar, from the mitzvah. What does it mean she's excluded? Rashi's analysis was the reason she was excluded was because it's Baal Tosif. So now we're trying to understand, under what conditions is it Baal Tosif? So I said, because if a woman comes and says, I want to shake a little because it's fun, that's not Baal Tosif. If she wants to shake the lulav because she wants to do a mitzvah, that's Baal Tosif. That's us, sir. So she said, she argued maybe there's an in-between case. What about a woman who wants to blow, wants to shake lulav because she wants to join God's army as a volunteer? Not because she says she wants to do a mitzvah. Is that it? So I'm trying to say that there is someone who gives such an analysis. The analysis on the whole, this machlokas is there are reams and reams of written on it, and there are different levels. Let me just point out that Tosfot disagrees with Rashi for a whole variety of reasons. First of all, because there is no such concept as a person, Baal Tosfot, by adding an extra person, and besides the Tosas himself proves that Rabbi Yehuda, the one who's critical here, mentions the famous story I mentioned. Somebody said about the non-Jewish slave Tami, slaves of Rabbi Gamliel, and he mentions there he himself. Rabbi Yehuda reports that Hilni Hamalka sat in the sukkah with her seven sons. And the scholars visited her without raising any objections. See, and this is Rabbi Yehuda, the same Rabbi Yehuda who seemed to object by these four cases. When it came to Sukkah, he quotes that Hilni Hamalka sat in the Sukkah and was fine. Even though it's a mitzvah that says Shas Mangama, why didn't Rabbi Yehuda object on the grounds of what? With Baal Tosif? How is she sitting in the Sukkah? Now there's a lot of discussion of this. Sad because she sat in the sukkah for her sons, and there's all this. I don't want to go into the analysis, but Rabbi Yehuda brings it. Therefore, Tosas says that Rabbi Yehuda's objection is only on these four things. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have a general objection to women doing mitzvah seishas mitzvah. Only these four things: smicha, because there's a problem smicha, the korban. The second problem was shofar, because you're not supposed to blow shofar needlessly. The third case is the case of Tefillin, because tefillin, we'll talk about this at great length, because tefillin requires guf naki. When you wear tefillin, it's like wearing a sefer Torah. You can't just get distracted. You can't worry about your bodily needs. You have to be totally, you have to, like wearing a sefer Torah. And what?
So since
it was considered so strict, only the men who were obligated were allowed to. The women who weren't obligated shouldn't do it. That's why the Michu. And Aliyah Lerek, because Aliyah Lerek involves bringing a korban, and there's a problem bringing unnecessary korbanot to the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? Because coming to the, excuse me, the fourth one was Aliyah Lerek. Aliyah Lerek involves bringing a korban, and the, and it's bringing chulin, an unnecessary korban, to the Beit HaMikdash.
So how did Rashi get out of that?
First of all, there's no clear source that Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. But second of all, I'll be happy to discuss tefillin with you in some other day. No, we're going to discuss. There are other women. There's no clear, by the way, we have no, other than folklore, we have no documentation that Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. Although it's certainly, I know the Yerachayim's daughter wore tefillin. I know a whole list of other women, Michal Bat Shaul wore tefillin. Right? Michal Bat Shaul's tefillin wore tefillin. We'll talk about all these things. That's what Rabbi Yehuda objected. Rabbi Yossi says, we don't object. Now, again, this is we're trying to understand Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yossi, oh, there's no problem. It's Rashut. Okay?
Yes.
What? Okay, so let me just summarize. Before you ask questions, let me just sort of summarize. Because I can see people are getting more confused. We saw two views. We saw four cases with two views. One was the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's view is that when the Torah said the women were exempted, it's more than just an exemption, essentially an exclusion. The women are excluded, have no part, there's no relationship between them and the mitzvah. At least that's how Rashi burns, seems to be Rashi. Okay? On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon disagree. Rabbi says, when women are free, it's a reshut. Reshut means you want it, you can. You don't want it, you don't. Yes, that was Rashi's approach. And that's Rashi's analysis of the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda, Tosfot, has a different analysis of the Gemara. He says that the machloket between that everybody really agrees. Everybody agrees that it's a reshut for women. There is only, why did Rabbi Yehuda disagree on these four cases? Because in these four cases, there's a downside. Normally, in the mitzvah they say Shazman Grama, you can do it or not do it, right? You can decide. There's no downside. She doesn't want it. She doesn't want it. Nothing happens. If she wants to do it, fine. Let her do it. In these four, there's a downside. If she doesn't, there's a problem. She puts on. If she does smich on the korban, there's a problem. She's doing smich when she's not obligated to. She blows shofar. She's blowing shofar when she's not obligated to. If she comes, brings a korban, it's not, she's not obligated to put on tefillin. There's a problem because it requires guf naki, a clean body and a clean mind. Yes. No, but what's the downside? What's the downside? There's no extenuation.
She's not
hurting. Well, I mean, there's not. That's right. There's nothing wrong. In these four, there's a reason to argue against her doing it. In these four. Because she's not chayav, this results in an outcome that's problematic. If you're not chayav, how are you blowing shofar? How are you blowing shofar if you're not chayav? You're not allowed to blow star shofar needlessly. If you're not allowed to needlessly bring a korban to the Beit HaMikdash, you're not allowed to lean on a korban needlessly. Now, what is Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda? Now, according to Tosfos, what is Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda? If you have a reshut, what does it mean? That is according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's still a fundamental difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Even according to Tosfos, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rashut mean? Rashut means you're lacking God, you're volunteering to God's army. You're volunteering, you're a volunteer. According to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, you're in the army. Every woman who's in the army, she's been drafted. The only thing is that the draft notice says, if you want to show up, you can. If you don't want to show up, you can. That is a very fundamental difference. Let me give you a Elif Alfei Havdalot. when a yeshiva guy shows up at the draft office, right? What happens at the draft office when they give him his p'tor? The p'tor says, you've been drafted, and now it's being deferred. That's what the p'tor says. It's not that they haven't been drafted. They've been drafted. Okay, but it's been, their service has been put off.
But so in the case of the woman is obliged, she's not obliged.
She's not, because she's no, dropped. The draft, no, the says you're not obliged.
What do you mean drafted?
Means you're in God. The mitzvah, you're related to this mitzvah. It means as follows, okay? It means as follows. I'll tell you what the difference is. Let me put it this way. This is the classic case. And to really prove it to you. When you wear a tzitzis, okay, then there's tzitzis and there's a p'til tchelet, okay? If you wear tzitzis with a p'til tchelet, I can wear shackles. Because I can put on the, normally it's forbidden to wear wool on linen, but if I'm wearing shackles with a p'til tchelet, I can wear wool strings on a linen garment. Okay? That's the rules. There's no din of shackles with wool strings on a linen garment. If a woman wears tzitzis, can she wear shackles?
No. She can't
wear
tzitzis.
She can't.
Wait.
It's a paradox.
If I've been drafted, but I've given the option to serve or not to serve, when I serve, I serve as a part of God's army. I'm in that army. And I can do, but when I serve by the same rules.
So
I can wear tzitzis, I can wear shakmeh.
So
but if I'm a volunteer.
No,
I don't know, that's a vajanis. It's a big difference. There's still a fundamental, yes, I can do the mitzvah, it's not about those, right? But it's still a fundamental difference. And it's all the difference in the world. Okay? Now, this difference may also have a relationship to whether I can make a bracha, not make a bracha. That we're going to talk about next week. This whole analysis is very fundamental. Very fundamental. That essentially, it doesn't only mean that. I'm sorry, but you're feeling frustrated. It doesn't only mean that. I mean, the question of bracha hangs on other things as well. But in order to even contemplate making a bracha, I have to be somehow, in order to say Asher Kitchanab Misotav Vitzivanu, I gotta be in God's army. Right? I gotta have some relation to an army. Volunteers can't come along and say Vitzivanu. If I'm in God's army, but I get it as a reshut or an option, then I can say Vitzivanu. Then you can say, well, what does Vitzivanu mean? Vitzivanu mean obligation. I can play games with the word Vitzivanu. What does it mean? And I gotta understand it, and right? But I have to be in God's army, otherwise it doesn't make sense at all. The whole question of Rabbi, yes?
Now, I have a problem with the words volunteer and obligation. Okay. If someone volunteers,
yes,
and you give them the option out.
I know, when a person volunteers.
Wait a minute, let me finish.
I know it's wrong. Let me sit down and just get that out. Well, if I'm in the army, I got my papers. Okay? My papers say, you gotta go. You're gonna leave tomorrow to go to the Golan. Okay? That's what your papers say. You have a bris tomorrow, you don't have to go to the Golan. Frimmer decides, okay, he's out. Frimmer decides, then he's not going to go to the bris. He's going to go, he wants to join it. So he go back with the same rules. He was there. Hey, true, he got exempted, but he has a right. He says, no, I want to go with him, but the rest of the group, I'm going to go. You have a volunteer from Chutzlaretz who's coming into, right? He sees all these troops going to the Golan. He says, I want to go to the Golan too. He fucking says, I'm sorry, I don't need you, I don't want you, I don't know. A whole different status. It's not, he's not drafted. He's not part of the army. It's a whole different status. That's a volunteer. Okay, when you're in the army, you have options. You can be exempted and not exempted. And that's...
That isn't my question. I'm sorry, Ari. My question is, if you are of the narrow definition of a volunteer, as opposed to somebody who's obligated to do something, okay, if I'm supposedly in Hashem's army, and I'm said you have certain rights and obligations, and you have certain exemptions that you are not obligated to do. If I choose to, if someone volunteers to do something,
that's
once the they do it,
that's not voluntary. The word volunteer is not being used properly.
I'm trying to understand definition of what.
In the army, you have exemptions. You can either use the exemption or not use the exemption.
But if you do something as a volunteer, if you are allowed to take upon yourself a mitzvah, because you volunteer to do it, if from that point on, are you then obligated to do that mitzvah from that point on, adesso?
Oh gosh, from that point on, no.
Or can you say, I'm going to do Havdalah this week, but next week I'm not going to do it?
Havdalah is a better example, but...
that was the thing that came to my mind. So answer my question.
I didn't know what it was. The answer is that a woman has the option to pick and choose, unless she's done it as a Kabbalat Neder. We're talking about women obligating themselves. Kabbalat Neder means she does it at a certain amount of time, and which is specified as 3 times, and she didn't say, I'm just trying it on a trial basis. We'll talk about these things.
She didn't say anything that she may be obligated.
That's what I want to understand.
When does a voluntary act become an obligation?
Let me just give you one answer. We'll come back. We'll discuss the great length later. The answer is, when a woman does something several times, it becomes obligated upon her because she's taken an oath, not because inherently she's obligated. The proof is that you can nullify oaths.
Nullifies the oath?
A court. You can do a tarif in the Darim or a Rosh Hashanah. I'll give you an example.
Anytime.
Let's free the audience and we can continue discussing it. Because we'll get back and we'll be discussing this later on as we go through.